Hey, and welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a really exciting guy who survived Hurricane Harvey, which is awesome. Had 50 meters of rain, and he's still here. That's great. We have Joe Grisafi.
Yes, hi, Simon.
And we have his film, Lars and the Emo Kid. So
that's
you
it.
Made it.
That's
I'm so glad. Hello?
Oh. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I thought we lost you there. That wouldn't be good.
You're going in and out.
Am I?
A little. Now you're clear.
Okay, I'm going to move you closer. That's probably the problem. I had you too far away from me. So, yeah, I thought your film was fun. I have so many questions. I just want to start
with answers.
With little things like the school. Where did you find a whole school to shoot in?
The school was provided by a friend of mine named Molly Vernon. She used to work there, and she's a filmmaker herself. She was the film instructor at the school. And I approached her about the location, and she pulled some strings and made it work.
Because I thought that was pretty cool. You had a whole school. It looks like you had full run of the school to shoot in.
Well, you know, we used three different schools.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
So Molly helped us with the scenes that involved the lockers, the hallways, Houston Community College, and Richard Boyd. Let us use the classroom in the opening scene and the poetry scene.
Yes.
And the cafeteria was out in Deerbrook.
Okay.
Nicole Elliott's mom worked at that school. Nicole was our lead, Rosemary. And her mom got us in to use the cafeteria.
Okay. Is the lead Lars's girlfriend at the end?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into it. Yeah, spoiler alert. Sorry. I'm going to ask questions.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's who you're talking
about,
okay. Right?
No, I think we got quite a bit of bang for the little bit of money we spent. And those schools were a huge, huge deal. Like you said, it's not easy to get a school. And it just looks like we spent a lot of money on those scenes. And they were so gracious to us. They didn't charge us anything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, you have a great restaurant scene. I need to know more about that one.
The name of the restaurant in the movie is Esteban's, and it just so happens that the name of the restaurant is, in real life, is Esteban's.
Oh God, that's funny.
Paxton wrote it, the scene based on a guy who used to do late night infomercials on how to play the guitar, and his name was Esteban.
Yes.
And I'm not familiar with that, but I took his word for it. And we found this Mexican restaurant named Esteban's.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
And it was pretty great.
I think this film, that Esteban character is my favorite in the film. Nothing against the leads or anything. I love Esteban.
Oh, he's great. And one of the gags that we were not able to do, one of the best gags in the script that we weren't able to do was at that restaurant. You may have remembered there's – while the orders are being taken, there's a girl with a guitar walking around in the background playing.
Yes.
There were supposed to be like six or eight of those guys playing guitar and bumping into each other. It's supposed to be full of guitar players.
Oh my God, that would be hysterical.
And all their names were going to be Esteban.
Oh my God, that would have been good.
And we just, you know, on these low budget things, there's some things you just have to let go just to get the scene done. It turned out really good, I think. That particular scene was shot over 3 days. We only had 3 hours a day to shoot. That was before the restaurant opened for business.
3 days to film that one scene.
What's that?
I can't believe that took 3 days.
That one scene at the restaurant. It took 9 hours.
Oh, wow.
But 3 days.
Wow.
They let us work there for free. But the catch was we had to shoot before they opened for business, I think at 10 o'clock.
In the morning.
In the morning, so we had to show up at 6 or 6:30, set up, and shoot very quickly.
Oh, wow. Okay, you know the last location I have to discuss, the store, because that is a real store. It has to be.
That was a real store, and it's Stanton's in Alvin, Texas, Stanton apostrophe S. Alan Stanton turned out to be a friend of Paxton's dad. So this was a whole, it's who you know to get things done film. So Alan Stanton let us shoot there. That was several days, 3 or 4 days, for as long as we could be there until the sunset. But we did not own the place. It was always open for business while we were filming.
Really? Okay.
So some of those people you see walking around in the background were real customers at the grocery store. And that's one of the reasons we used such a narrow depth of field in those scenes.
Yeah,
because we didn't have time to run around and get people to sign releases. So we just made sure they were out of focus so you couldn't identify them.
Yeah.
Then we didn't need the release.
You're
so
really
badly.
Tight in on all the store seats, like super tight.
Yes.
I did notice that. I'm like, well, that's weird. He's not going wide here. Because I want to know why you're not doing a wider shot to give
and
me a
little
bit.
And that's why we didn't own the place.
Okay. I'm going to go to my notes.
Again, it was a favor. We got to use the store as a favor.
That's awesome. I thought that was really good. Because I'm like, I know that's a real store, so I have to ask. At the beginning, I have in my notes that I think Lars is a social outcast right at the beginning of the film. At least I'm getting that impression.
Yes, he is. He is a social outcast, and it's up for debate whether he's really strange or he just is letting his depression get the best of him and he's isolating himself, because he's a normal looking kid.
Well, that's what I was thinking. He doesn't look, because I'm looking at the title, Lars the Emo Kid, and I'm like, I don't think he's that emo.
No, and we wanted there to be some evolution.
Yeah, I figured that's why you did that way. Yeah. Okay, good. I took it right.
Yes, you did take it right.
Well, you never know.
We thought about going emo right out of the gate, and I said, you know what, let's have it evolve a little bit. It happens pretty quickly once he meets the other emo kids.
Oh, of course.
It's the next day. But, we wanted to see. I think it helps people identify with the character more.
Oh, I agree.
Because everyone I talk to, it seems, identifies with Lars. I certainly did. When I was in high school, I was a pretty normal-looking guy. One year I showed up with a purple hair on the back of my head. Beyond that, I was a pretty normal-looking guy. But I let things get to me. I really identified with the character of Lars. Him finding this oddball group of friends, that I did that in high school. I didn't associate with the jocks or the stoners or any particular group. It was my group of friends was kind of a conglomerate of people. So I didn't fit into one particular category, which I don't think Lars does at the beginning either. And then as the film evolves, you notice his little group of emo kids expands beyond emo kids.
Yes.
There's the drug dealer who's like the friendly drug dealer. There's other people that get involved in the group and become friends, which I'm really happy with and proud of the result of that element of the film.
Well, the film's very clean is one thing I want to say. Like, I do find it works perfectly. All the scenes are nice and open, except for the store scenes. Thought they were a little tight. I want to go back to the baseball scene.
Sure.
You have a ton of extras. And your musical choice is an opera choice.
Yes. You're talking about the opening credits music?
Yes. Yes.
That was Paxton's idea. He wrote that into the script.
Okay.
He wrote that piece of music into the script, so I made an effort to find it. And I did. We found a music supervisor named Sean Fernald who helped us get the rights to some music, and we got that piece of music for $100.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
But yeah, Paxton wrote that into the script.
Okay.
So I felt an obligation to make that happen.
Okay, good.
And the extras, one of my jobs that keeps me afloat in this business is that I work as a casting director.
Ah, okay.
So I do a lot of extras casting, and I have a database of people. I run a website called southwestcasting.com here in Houston. So I've got like 12,000 people on this email list, which of course is a huge benefit when I'm producing a film.
Okay, that was my next question. So we're getting there good.
Yeah, so my film, people, when you make a low-budget film, people will give you the advice, don't use a lot of people, use as few as you have to.
Yeah, but I noticed
you have all that rule because I have access to all these people that want to go do it, even though they're not getting paid. They just love being on set, or they need the experience. They need a line on their resume. And my low budget films, with the exception of Conjoined, look a little bigger than your typical $2,000 film.
Well, yeah, I was thinking exactly that. Good. So you're answering some of my questions I have later on. Perfect. These are my questions. I do have one minor quibble on a script issue, so I'm going to ask
you. Sure.
Lars' mother leaves after one bad day because it doesn't really explain a lot. She just sort of leaves.
Their backstory is before the film.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That maybe
their story starts with months of trouble.
That's what years. I figured. So okay.
If you remember during the restaurant scene, she says it's been going on a lot longer than that.
Yeah, I know. I was just kind of like, okay, am I supposed to assume it was before or not? These are just questions that come up.
It wasn't. It wasn't just a one day. Oh, I hate you thing. It was these things in real life can take some time. And we meet them at the breaking point.
Okay. Where did you find all the goths, or did you have a makeup department to make them goths? That was one of my questions.
Oh, they were just all young actors. They weren't necessarily goth in real life.
Okay, just wondering. I didn't think so, but you never know.
Tyler Tackett, Alicia Dumovich, David Simpson, and Rebecca Berto were the emo kids. And Rebecca Berto has done some makeup in the past. She was also our wardrobe designer, so she picked all the clothes for the emo kids to wear. And we had another friend, Lauren, who helped us with makeup. She would show up, and I think I got her name wrong. It's been so long since I've talked to her. She would come out, do their makeup, and then have to go. And then we would just do touch-ups throughout the night.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you've been shooting it very tight. You shot in the morning. You shot during the day and evening. So you're shooting constantly at different times.
Yeah, we shot most of those park scenes were obviously at night.
Yes.
We shot – I could not tell you how many days we shot because it was spread out over a year.
Oh, okay.
But it may be, I'm going to say maybe we shot 25 days and partial days.
That's a lot, though. I mean, over a year.
It is a lot. We didn't necessarily have the luxury of shooting 12-hour days. Sometimes we shoot for 4 hours or 6 or 8 hours.
Well, that's what you're saying. Like, you're only shooting 3 hours at the Mexican restaurant. You may not be back for 3 days at the Mexican restaurant.
Right. Well, fortunately, the Mexican restaurant was 3 consecutive days.
Okay.
Yes. But then, you know, maybe we took 2 weeks off because everyone had to go to work. And
oh, of course.
When you can't pay people, you cannot own their time.
Oh, I agree.
So then, and I had an issue towards the end of production. I got really sick and ended up in the hospital for a week.
Ooh,
so there was a chance, you know, at that time, there was a chance the movie wasn't even going to be finished.
Yikes. That must be upsetting.
It was a life-threatening thing, and of course, life is more important than the film.
Oh, I agree, but you're a filmmaker. You want to see the end of your project.
But I recovered. As soon as I was able to work, I gathered everybody up and said, okay, we got to finish this as quickly as possible so this doesn't happen again. And we shot the last few scenes and finished the movie.
So I couldn't even tell. Okay, I want to say your editing is excellent. I was really impressed. Nice job on the editing. I even put that in
Thank
my
you.
Notes. Because I thought and it I, flowed no, I, nicely. I don't get that in a lot of indie films. Like I don't like the edits a lot of the time. And I thought your edits worked.
I stressed out over that. I don't necessarily consider myself a great editor, but I appreciate your words. I do think I worked really hard to make this edit as good as possible. But that also goes into the directing of it.
Oh, of course. I agree.
When I sat down to edit, it was pretty much the way I shot it or the way I planned it to be. And I was just like, it turned out to be a pretty easy edit because I was really meticulous on blocking all the shots.
Yeah, I had no issues with your blocking. It was good. I guess the woman at the, I guess it's not even a spoiler, the woman about to jumping at the end, kind of like, I'm going to do it this time. I was, that was kind of funny.
That's Alicia Dumovich. That was, that was a scene that's like, oh, let's try this. She was just going to, the scene just called for her threatening to jump off the house.
Right.
And we had lined up a house to go film that bit at. It was a normal one-story house. And across the street was the low-hanging roof.
Yeah, I was wondering where you found that. So
I told my friend William, who agreed to let us use his house, I said, don't take offense, William, but that across the street is funny.
It is.
I'm going to go ask if we can film there. I knocked on the guy's door, and he said, absolutely, you're welcome to it. So we got to film across the street at this house that made that scene really funny.
It was good. Now, I do have a question. The teachers in the school, is this a personal experience or is this something that was made up?
That's Paxton's writing.
I know that.
To the best of my knowledge, it was just something that's made up.
Because I'd never heard of poetry class. So poetry class, I thought, was quite the worst teacher ever I've written in my notes.
You know, in junior high, we had creative writing classes.
See, we didn't. So it's all new to me.
We had to write stories and read them to the class. It wasn't poetry, but it was short stories.
Yes, yes, so we did do that.
This is out there. But that was, for me, it was, I had the creative writing in junior high.
Yeah, that's when I had mine.
Yeah. So I didn't have poetry in my high school, but Paxton says it's a thing.
Well, that's what I was asking. I don't know.
And it worked either way.
It was great. The scenes worked. Yes, I agree. Yeah. I thought they were funny. So, and the guidance counselor with the SATs, like I wrote WTF. Like, he doesn't stop going on about them. I'm like, okay, buddy.
That's Dan Braverman. He's in my other films, too, Dead of Night and Conjoined. He's just a wonderful friend and a really great actor.
He made me laugh.
Again, but Paxton gets all the credit for the writing. We got some funny actors, but without the funny words to say, we had nothing.
Well, I'm giving
you Paxton, again, gets all the credit for that. And I remember in high school what an emphasis they put on the SATs.
Yes.
And for my life, it ultimately didn't matter. Because, you go into filmmaking, you don't have to go to school for it. I did, but I could have failed my SATs. I didn't even take my SATs till the year after I graduated high school.
Yeah, we don't have them up in Canada, so they don't mean anything to us. when Paxton hears this, I guess he'll hear the love I'm giving him for his script numerous times.
Yes, he deserves. He's the reason this exists. He produced a series of short films called Lars the Emo Kid that were on YouTube. And I met Paxton on the set of another short film, and he was helping out as a PA, just a general a crew member. And when we were done that day, first day, we were chatting, and he said, Joe, hey, I'm a filmmaker too. I got these shorts on YouTube called Lars the Emo Kid. Why don't you, check them out? Let me know what you think. And when most filmmakers say that, I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. And I may not ever get around to it. But for some reason, I went home that night and looked them up, and I watched the first Lars the Emo Kid short. And I must have watched it 20 times that night.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was really funny. And the kid was 16 years old when he made it.
Oh,
15
wow.
or 16. And I watched it. I called Sarah Gaston and said, hey, Sarah, watch this as soon as you can. She said, oh, yeah, that's really funny. And I watched asked other people, that's funny. And it had over 1 million views on YouTube. And the comments were all spectacular. So I thought about it for a while. And there was another script we were going to produce next. And I called Paxton. I said, you know what? I really like this character in your short film. If you can write a feature-length screenplay based on that character, and I like it, I'll stop whatever film I'm getting ready to do, and I'll do your film. Of course, it's going to be micro-budget, no money, but we'll do it. And he's like, okay. Didn't hear from him for 9 months. And then out of the blue, I got a call. And he said, I got a script for you to read. I said, oh, well, fantastic. So he sent it to me. I stopped what I was doing, and I read it. which I, if anyone that knows me knows, I kind of procrastinate getting around to reading their scripts. But I stopped what I was doing and read his script right away, and it was really, really good. Now, I tend to get excited when it just any film script is offered to me that I have the chance to make. So, again, I gave the script to Sarah Gaston and said, will you read this and tell me if it's as good as I think it is? And she read it, and she told me, Joe, you have to do this script.
Well, that's great.
And you have to do it.
I like the script. I think it's funny.
I love the script. So Paxton's responsible for it, but Sarah basically greenlit it.
Well, that's good. I have one weird question about the film, if I can ask.
Sure.
This may be a spoiler, may not be, I don't know. Near the end of the film, there's a drive-by shooting.
Yes.
Is that all in his head?
We made it there. We put it there.
Because I wasn't really sure, because the other guy touches himself, so it must have happened.
In the script, there's the drive-by shooting. And in the script, it's not clear whether it's imaginary or in his head.
Okay.
The clowns were not in the script.
Oh, I didn't. I like the clown aspect. I thought that was quite funny.
I do. I put the clowns in there as to show Lars finally facing his fears.
Oh, okay.
And it makes sense to me. People just like it because they're clowns with guns. But there's a purpose for those clowns to be there because at the beginning of the movie, he's scared of clowns.
Yes, he is.
And this is just him facing all of this. It's kind of a turning point in the script for him. So whether the drive-by is real or not, I'm playing the drive-by as real.
So was I.
And just one of those scenes where, you know, like in Pulp Fiction, when all those bullets are unloaded at him, at Jules and Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta, and nothing hits them.
Yep, that's correct.
That's the idea of that scene.
Okay.
And the clowns are in his head.
Okay. Yeah, I figured as much. I figured it was just the marijuana speaking to him.
Yeah, and maybe there was something else in it.
Yes, you never know. Okay, is Lars in the shorts the same Lars that's in the movie?
Paxton plays Lars in the shorts and the feature. Yes,
hold on.
Like, there's no.
So the writer is Lars.
What's that?
So Paxton's Lars then.
Yes.
The guy that wrote the script is Lars.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It would not have been right to ask anyone else to play it unless he didn't want to do it.
Oh, that's funny. So he knows exactly what he's going for in this character.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I don't read the credits. I apologize. I really don't read the credits.
Okay. This is what one of the funny things about it. Paxton does not consider himself an actor.
He's good.
He's great. He doesn't want to be an actor. He doesn't think he's an actor, but he's the only actor in the cast that's won 2 acting awards.
He's excellent.
I was there to finesse his on-camera performance, but the core was all him.
I don't know how he doesn't consider himself an actor, though. He's a writer, then? That's what he considers
he's
himself?
He's a writer, and he's a screenwriter and a songwriter.
He's very good. Those
are his goals, screenwriting and songwriting.
Well, maybe acting should just slip in there at some point because he's quite good.
I wish he would. He's great.
I mean, he is the best in the movie. I mean, nothing against anybody else. He is the strongest.
Oh, no offense taken, and I don't think anyone else would. He had to carry this film, and he did in spades.
I mean, his mom is okay. I think everybody else is okay. I mean, I like his buddy in the store, but I think he has a good lines to work with.
Right.
I mean, I think he's pretty solid, but again, he's supporting Paxton, and I think Paxton's just such a strong lead that the other guy just works off him.
Yes. And the other reviews we've had have said that same thing, that Tyler Tackett was a great foil to Paxton's Lars. They just...
Absolutely.
The perfect balance.
Has Paxton seen Clerks at all or anything?
Oh, I'm sure he has. He's a big movie buff.
Okay, because I got kind of some Clerk action in the store at times. Oh, that brings remind me. That great scene was hysterical.
That comparison's inevitable, I think, with a dialogue-heavy movie like Slacker-type movie like this.
Yes.
And there's one scene that we kind of wanted to tip our hat to Clerks, and that was the scene against the white brick wall.
Yes.
When the drug dealer Ernie came up, or the drug user Ernie came up to buy some ecstasy.
Yes.
That was so. Let's just make this kind of look like Clerks the best we can. We had to shoot that scene really fast, and I thought the best way to do it was just standing against the wall.
So I'm taking some good vibes off. That's good. So we're on the same wavelength. I like to hear that.
Yeah, this is great.
So tell me some stuff I've missed. Like, what would you like to discuss? I've pretty much done my notes. So,
We shot the film on a Canon T2. DSLR.
There you go. Stuff I can't ask. I figured you just bring those.
Yeah, I had bought a different camera to use. I had spent $4,000 on a camera to shoot this film, and then a friend of mine introduced me to the Canon DSLR series, and I just went out and bought one and played with it. And I go, this is what I'm going to use, and I'm going to sell. I sold the other camera as quickly as I could.
Oh wow!
And I learned how to use this DSLR.
Oh, the film looks great. It's got a really crisp look on it, I think.
The DSLR, now, of course, there are much better cameras for the same price.
Of course.
But when we filmed this, I was really happy with the results. I was very meticulous about the lighting. The DSLRs quickly got the reputation of being able to use low light. But I know if you just rely on low light, you're going to have a pretty crappy image still, but you'll have an image. So I want this to look as sharp as possible. So I learned how to use it. I lit the best I could. Some of the lights, I borrowed a light kit, but I also used Home Depot stuff.
That's fine.
I even found some track lighting in a neighbor's garbage can and took the track lighting out and hardwired it and used that.
But if it works, who cares?
No, it worked great. No one can tell. It looks, you know, at the time, I would have put it up against some low budget film shot on Red, and it looked really good.
I have to ask you a question. What is Red?
Red was a high end 4K camera at the time. It's still a high end camera, but at the time, the Red, I think, was a $10,000 or $15,000 camera.
Okay.
Still. And here I am with this $900 camera, and we were getting images that were almost as good. To the average viewer, the image was close. The professional could tell the difference, of course.
Oh, well, that's their job, right?
But then there, you know, some filmmakers get the Red, and they film on the Red, and they don't know how to color correct the footage. So, and some of those films, our movie looked better than some of those films.
I thought your film looked really well done, very professional. I honestly say that too. As I said, I do a lot of indie interviews. I watch a lot of indies, so I'm like, yeah, this is really well done.
Well, I worked really hard. I wanted to go. I really believed in this script, and I didn't want to let Paxton down. And as an actor myself, you know, I want to work with a director who is going to make the movie as good as possible. So I had all these actors who were working for deferred pay and not getting any money for this. So I owed it to them to make this as good as possible so they can benefit from it.
I do have
you know, if the footage doesn't look good, they can't use it on their reel. And, you know, if the movie doesn't make any money, at least they walk away with a film they can be proud of and can show people professionally.
Absolutely. I don't think they have anything to be ashamed of here. It's wonderful. I have a question. No, what did you do about your catering? That's the question I always like to ask.
I went to get breakfast food for everybody on my way to set. And when we had a long day that was at least 6 hours long, we had Saber Munns, Saber Summers Munns was my co-producer who was out there on set almost every day. She would go get lunch, or she would have someone go get lunch. You know, we have pizza, we have sandwiches. A lot of the money went to food because we didn't try to find. Had I worked a little harder, I probably could have found some sponsors. But since we didn't really know our schedule, it would be hard to coordinate that. So I just bought the food.
So where have you taken the film? The film festivals to?
We played at festivals for about 2 years, I think.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
None of the major festivals, unfortunately, but we had some really good experiences, like the Austin Revolution Film Festival, which is quickly becoming an important festival. You know, probably in a couple of years, you're going to hear a lot more about that nationally. We played in several different countries. We played in a couple of local film festivals. We won the best of show at the Lake Charles Film Festival in Louisiana last year.
That's great.
Which was completely unexpected. You know, I went to that festival. I don't even remember knowing that there was an award ceremony. But at the end of the festival, I drove out there. It's a one-day fest, an all-day event. And I drove out there because it was only like a 2.5-hour drive. And I stayed all day. And then they said, hey, we're having, you know, they announced the award ceremony. And I went to the ceremony. And we won 3 awards.
That's awesome.
You know, not only did we win Best of Show, we won Best Narrative Film, and Paxton won a Best Actor award.
That's great.
I was stoked because I didn't expect it. I don't expect these things, and when we get awards, it's like, this is great. It's very validating.
Oh, I especially hope so. I would think
with so many films out there now at this level, so many independent films, just for someone to, including yourself, for people to acknowledge it. Acknowledge the work. It just means the world.
Oh, well, I appreciate you letting me watch the film. I enjoy indie films, so I do like doing these interviews to promote you guys as much as I can and give you a little boost on Twitter. I hope it helps.
It does. We have it on Amazon Prime ourselves. I haven't gone through a distributor yet. So when a review or a podcast goes up, I can see if the numbers rise.
Oh, good.
And so far they have.
That's great.
And yeah, it's really.
So
most filmmakers don't get that information on a daily basis. They have to wait 3 months for their distributor to give them a report.
Oh, wow.
This has proven to be valuable doing it myself because I can see the Amazon report, how many minutes the movie was streamed. The income is updated every 2 days. And like I said, when a story goes out or a review goes out, I can see if the numbers are affected. We had one film reviewer write a review. He was in the UK. And up until that point, we had nobody watching it in the UK. His review got published online, and suddenly like 5 or 6 people a week in the UK are watching it. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it's important to me.
I would say that.
And you can correspond. The day he published it is pretty much the week that the numbers went up.
That's great. I think that's so
every podcast, every review, every interview has so much value, well, big and small.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's all I can say on that.
No, it's true because it just takes one person to fall in love with the film and start telling people.
So back to what you said, how many other films have you directed? It sounds like you've done a lot.
I've directed 4 feature films. Technically, Lars is the 3rd I directed, but the 4th that I released. While we were in post-production with Lars, I had the opportunity to do this little movie called Conjoined real quick. So Lars' post-production got put on hold. I shot this film Conjoined, edited, and released it as quickly as I could, and then got back on Lars, which we finished and released to festivals shortly after that.
Oh, wow. You are a busy man. Very, very
busy. I'm hoping to be busy. I'm hoping to get busier. We're trying to put together a film called Kids vs. Zombies that my friend Courtney Sandifer wrote and is going to produce. And we, fingers crossed, we get to start in the spring.
I would love to see that. I have a friend of mine that loves zombie movies. That's his thing. So
I want to correct myself real quick. Earlier we were talking about makeup.
Yes.
And I wanted to correct the woman's name that helped us. Her name was Lorena Lopez.
Okay.
I haven't talked to her in so long it slipped my mind, but I want to apologize to her if she listens to this.
I hope she does.
And just let her know that her makeup was spectacular.
I agree.
Her help is tremendously important.
Okay, well, I'm pretty much out of questions, unless you have something else to add. I'll ask you my fun questions.
It's the movie's on Amazon Prime. Everyone goes to find it, and we hope to release the DVD and Blu-ray later this year.
And it's also on Vimeo.
It's on Vimeo. You have to pay for Vimeo, but if you have Amazon Prime, it's free.
We don't have Amazon Prime in Canada.
Ah, okay. So yeah, then go to Vimeo.
There you go.
Search for it. We're trying to get on YouTube. You know, YouTube lets you do pay-per-view rentals now.
I had no idea.
it's something that's new to me. I learned that this year, but I have to have 1,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel, and I'm only up to 800. So if anyone wants to watch it on YouTube, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm Hamburger Man YouTube, Joe Grisafi. Subscribe, and when I hit 1,000, I can put Lars up on YouTube for rent.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Okay, fun questions. These are really easy answer questions. Your favorite film?
My favorite film by far is from the files of Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad.
Oh, wow. Naked Gun. I haven't had that.
That movie, I've watched it 100 times, and if it comes on, I stop and watch it. Okay. It's comedy perfection to me.
Oh, I agree with you.
Comedy perfection.
This may have answered my second question with your first question. Somebody comes over and wants to watch a film. Do you put Naked Gun on, or do you have a second choice?
No, I don't. I don't push it on people because it's most of my friends have seen it. Most of my filmmaker friends have seen the movie. If we watch movies, I try to find something unique. I do have a few hundred DVDs, not maybe like 300. I try to find things like Troll Hunter, unique movies.
The Danish film?
That my friends would actually enjoy and walk away with something from.
Okay, interesting.
Or we just watch, you know, sometimes I get together with my friends Chuck and Courtney, Chuck Norfolk and his wife Courtney, and we'll just watch bad movies.
Like Troll 2 or?
Yeah, Troll 2, old black and white bad movies. I got a friend that, Dave Harlan's a friend of mine. He's an actor here in Houston, and every month or so, he and a bunch of his friends get together for what they call Crap Fest. And it's their own little private film festival, and they bring the worst movies they can possibly bring and just have food and just laugh and talk at the movies, and it's the best day of movie lover can have.
Have they brought Uwe Boll's Postal yet?
No, I haven't seen any of his movies, actually.
I will recommend for his film festival, Postal.
Postal. I've read a lot about all of his films.
Terrible.
And I followed his little tantrums last year.
Oh, there's Postal was really bad. I don't know if I can watch any more Uwe Boll. That was awful.
See, I find those movies like that inspiring, too. Not from a creative standpoint, but from if he can get the money to make that, what's holding me back from asking for money? Because my biggest hurdle in asking investors for money is getting their money back. That's so hard to do, and I don't want to be the filmmaker that lost all their money. Well, so when I've decided to make a film, I said, I'm just going to pay for this myself, but it's going to be as little as possible. If you believe in me, join me.
I think you're doing a great job from the one film I've seen of yours. I think it's fun.
Thanks.
Great. My last question is even easier. You're in the movie theater at the concession stands. What do you buy?
Junior Mints.
Junior Mints, okay.
Junior Mints and sometimes a Dr. Pepper or a big salty pretzel.
Oh, see, now we're on the same wavelength. Salty pretzel.
Yeah, that's my menu. I love Junior Mints at the movies. Oh,
well,
and of course popcorn, but Junior Mints get the priority.
Oh, I'm not a big popcorn guy, but Junior Mints I could definitely sit into. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you so much.
I loved your film. And give my love to Paxton if you ever see him again.
I will. I talked to him on Facebook all the time. He did move to Austin, so he's in the Austin scene right now.
Okay, so South by Southwest or whatever, South by Southeast or whatever they call it out there.
South by Southwest.
Okay, I was right. So yes. Good. Well, thank you again for your time. I look forward to speaking to you again in the future about another project.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye.